This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Te jotka jatkatte matkaa.
Para aquellos de ustedes que continúan.
Nous espérons que vous avez passé un bon moment sur notre vol et espérons vous rejoindre.
For those of you continuing on, we wish you a safe and pleasant journey. If this is your final destination, we welcome you home.
After being isolated in our homes for long periods of time, it's easy to feel less at home than ever. This is the podcast where I, Sandra Andres, and Laura Bach invite fellow artists, norm breakers, researchers, scientists, and spiritual leaders to share vulnerable stories and profound insights about how we all can feel more at home with ourselves.
Together with our guests, we will examine how to break the behavioral patterns that make us feel stuck and explore how to live a more joyful, connected, and sustainable life from the inside and out.
Because we do know one thing, maybe now more than ever. Regardless of our gender identity, profession, or nationality, we are more alike than we are different. And often it is a crisis or a challenge that cracks our hearts wide open and brings us closer to ourselves.
We are so excited to have you here with us. Welcome to Coming Home.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Sandra. I am particularly excited about today's episode.
Me too.
We are talking to Danish actor Magnus Bruun and Australian psychologist Simon Rice. And together with them, we are trying to grasp this complex perception that has been passed down from generation to generation of what we think we ought to be as a man or woman and the consequences of that.
Yes, exactly. We will get into the fascinating concept of precarious manhood, which I thought was completely eye-opening.
Absolutely.
The importance of role modeling and how we can heal old, unhealthy gender narratives through listening to ourselves and listening to each other. This conversation is not to be missed, so stay tuned. We just need to inform you that there's mention of self-harm and suicide in this episode, so please be aware of that. And if you or someone you know are experiencing thoughts of self-harm, please contact your local help hotline.
First to join us is Magnus Bruun. He is a Danish actor known for a variety of roles across film and television, best known from playing the brutal Viking Knut in the historical fiction television series The Last Kingdom, as well as providing voiceover and mocap for the male lead of Ivor in Assassin's Creed Valhalla. He is also an ambassador for Children's Aid Foundation Denmark and uses his voice to inspire change in areas such as new masculinity and equality. Hello and welcome, Magnus Bruun, which is the Danish pronunciation of your name.
It sure is.
We've got Sandra joining us from Stockholm, and Magnus and I are in the same studio, which is very exciting to have you here.
Yeah, Copenhagen.
Yeah, welcome, Copenhagen. Magnus.
Thank you for having me.
And I just want to tell the listeners that you and I, we go quite a while back because we've been working together since, I think, first time in 2010 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
On Dinsen Treiber, maybe.
Oh, yeah. That too, I forgot that.
Yeah,
that's right.
Way back. And Sandra doesn't know Magnus at all, really.
I don't know you at all, Magnus.
Yeah, sorry about that, Sandra.
But you will after this interview. I think we should just jump straight into the first story.
It is 2006 and it is an overcast day in Copenhagen. Nothing special about that. Just another day of typical Scandinavian weather. Magnus hasn't even taken notice of the conditions outside. He has just finished a rehearsal at the Royal Theatre.
Okay, that's a wrap.
And his own thoughts have his full attention. Thoughts like, am I on my way to become a great actor? What is my next move? How can I be the one to get that line, get that other part, that next job? How can I get seen more and in the right way? His thoughts are abruptly interrupted by a colleague who seems to need something. The colleague pulls him aside and starts talking. It takes Magnus a few moments to take in what he is actually saying. I like you. I think you are really talented and good, but I want to tell you that you are alienating people with the way you behave. You should know that it will eventually make you very, very lonely. The colleague's voice is earnest and caring as he says this, which makes the moment impossible to escape or ignore. The words are hitting Magnus like a ton of bricks. Other incidents from his own life flash before his eyes. A memory of the time a director said, "You know you take up a lot of space when you enter a room, Magnus," pops up. Many others follow in a matter of seconds. For the first time, it is as if Magnus sees himself and his actions from above, like an objective observer. It is extremely uncomfortable, and the need to escape is overwhelming. The words resonate because he knows it. He knows that his colleague is speaking the truth. Something's gotta give. Something's gotta change. He has got to change.
What's it like for you to hear?
Well, it's all right because it's part of who I am. But I remember that day very clearly because it hurt.
What about it hurt you?
Because it was the truth, and I knew it, but I hadn't acknowledged it just yet, I think. But when he told me, it just resonated very deeply. I knew he was right, and that was why it hurt, because that something was wrong with me, with the way I was acting in the world, and not acting as an actor, but just as a person. So it was tough, but I'm so glad that he came up to me and put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Hey, Magnus, can I tell you something? Because I wouldn't be where I am today, and I wouldn't be the man I am today, and I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have my lovely and wonderful wife."
I kind of knew, you said, that. In what way? Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Well, when he said it, it just flashed all these episodes of, oh yeah, I used my sharp, pointy elbows right there to get in front, or everything was about me getting that part or getting that audition. So I just felt sad, like instant, when I heard the words, and remembering how I didn't see my family as much as I would have liked to, because I was thinking about my career, and because, no, I need to be doing that, and I need to be there. I can't go on a holiday because if somebody calls and I am not available, then I might not get the part. All these thoughts I had were part of this whole thing. That
way of being in the world.
Yeah. It's weird that I've always been very caring for people. I just had this huge ego underneath, trying to, not as much trying to succeed as an actor, but not fail.
Oh, okay.
As an actor.
Interesting.
Interesting how that focus is.
Because I've thought a lot about it. This fear of failing.
Okay.
Of this dream of mine not coming true, not being possible. That was driver for me more than I wanted to succeed.
That's interesting, the difference between that. I've never thought of that, but obviously there is a difference.
Because I think if I've had, like, I wanted to succeed, I want to succeed with all these people. I'm trying not to fail, so I'm constantly stepping on stuff and people to not fall.
I know this. I recognize so much of what you're saying, Magnus. I just have to say that because it's I had the same moment of recognizing that in myself a lot, where the fear actually drives you instead of the excitement and the joy and the goal.
And it's not healthy.
No, but there's really so much of it in our business, isn't it, Sandra, as well? The fear of not succeeding instead of the joy of succeeding,
exactly.
I presume, right?
And also, I really chose the wrong profession.
Because
this
didn't
is
we
just,
all?
This yeah. profession we all did. This profession is just rejection upon rejection,
yep.
you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
And that is, you have to cope with that. When people ask me, so can you give an advice or to all these young people who want to become an actor? Yeah. Can you find something else to do?
Yeah.
But because if you can, do that.
Do it.
And it's so horrible because if, obviously, go for it. But
no, sure.
But it's just, shit, this is tough. I'm not putting my kids into acting school unless they
really,
they
really,
come to
really
me
want
going,
to.
I want this, Dad.
Yeah. But so it sounds like you actually did some work on yourself as a human being instead of focusing on doing your career differently. It was sort more sort of an inwards look.
Yeah, definitely.
To change this sort of pattern, this behavior.
One thing was not always speaking. Not trying to get the laugh at a table read, not trying to pull focus away from whatever we were talking about and then getting in on me. And I'm not sure I did it back then because of ego, but I think I did it because of insecurity. It's not necessary because we're talking about Louise's problems right now with this or that. Don't. My old math teacher back in elementary school, he had this saying, thinky thinky before talky talky. Obviously, he said in Danish.
I'm going to use that.
I always remember that. Yeah, think on it and then think again. And if it's still, then say it. You don't have to say something all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And just by doing that, that made me begin to listen more.
Can I ask a question? Because we're going to touch upon your very strong feeling of justice, wanting equality, and also the new masculinity that I feel you very much represent, Magnus, I must say. But the whole listening bit, if you're the one that is silent as a man and not knowing and being in a position of just listening, it makes you weaker. Interested to hear what you think about that.
I think it's totally right. And it's about not being the one, not being the one in focus, not being that, I think. In the car on my way here, I thought of all these questions I wanted to ask you guys. Also because there must be so many similarities, I guess, on because you being actors as well.
Feel free to ask us questions. I mean, that's what we need to do more in life.
I find myself still being not fear-driven, but it's easy for me to fall back down in that pit of am I not good enough? Or one of my good friends is an actor and he has a career is really going great. I love him and I love all his work, but I also feel like envy coming. Like, oh shit, that audition, why didn't I get, like, what? So in the same moment that I feel, fuck yeah, that's so great for you, I love it, and feel gratitude to the world for him being seen now and getting all this exposure and all that, I instantly also feel like, but what about little me?
I wanted that part.
Yeah. And I was wondering if you feel this, have the same feelings, or is it just me being,
it's,
if you know what I mean?
It's just you, Magnus.
It's just me. Cool.
Moving on.
Listen,
next question.
I recognize this so much and I feel that a lot. So yeah, no, definitely. And then guilt and shame enters the scene, right? You feel that's the kind of struggle that you feel embarrassed about feeling that way. But I think that it's so human. Like it, we relate to each other, but in this business as well, where it's all about getting the next job, and in many ways, you know, it's like just a lot of rejection. It is hard to not feel both, and you can feel both. I think we're talking about this way too little as human beings, that we are not either or, we're both, you know, I'm happy and a bit jealous.
Yeah. And it's all right to have lots and lots of feelings. Also, when I sometimes speak to my acting colleagues and we talk about jobs and they, I'm doing this, I'm the lead in this new musical. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I would like to do more musical theater. Like, oh, you have this so nice. And then sometimes they look at me going, Shut up, Magnus. You've been traveling the fucking world with your job right now. I want to do all the... Oh, yeah, that's... It's like, oh.
Yeah.
So we all look at each other this way because there's more stuff to try, to do, to want. But we are on this lane, each of us. And it's, when will you be enough?
Yes.
Magnus, will you be enough?
That's it. That's it.
When
that's
is it enough?
Yeah, and I feel we can help each other so immensely in this business, but in all businesses, everyone, because we're a bit embarrassed to say out loud what we sort of envy with other people. Mm. And sometimes when people gain the courage and they say, oh, I envy you for this and this and this, I find that really amazing qualities, or this thing that happened to you, I would love that for happened to myself. And you've, as you said, you forget about that you've just traveled and you're still traveling the world with a huge international career going on, and you just won that part in the Danish musical, you know.
Yeah.
And you forget these things. So I think it's really healthy to say this out loud, say it with love, obviously, so it's not like a, well, you know, screw you for getting that job. But if we say it out loud, then we can help each other just remember all the greatness that's happening to ourselves.
Yeah, and we should do that.
Mm.
It's interesting what you said before. I just want to add that when you said, I knew already when you heard the words of your colleague, because we do know, I feel, that we observe ourselves when that happens, but then there's a choice that needs to be made. Okay, can I accept this and see it fully, or am I ignoring it and moving on? Mm. And I think that's where it just stagnates and it becomes toxic.
Yeah. Mm. And it didn't go away just like that. You know, it
was important.
It was hard work. I was in drama school when it happened, and I used the next 2 years of drama school to cope and change myself.
Mm.
And that was from project to project, from class to class, from whatever, you know, being, oh, shit, remember, you have to do it, you're doing that again, you know. Take it back, breathe, say, apologize, go out and apologize because you did it again, or whatever it was.
Good point. One of the things that is quite special about you is that you seem to be very comfortable with and very aware of the balance between the feminine and the masculine, both in you but also in the world. That's where the justice and equality comes in. And I feel like we should just maybe jump into the second story. It's October 2017. And he watches as the sexual abuse accusation against Harvey Weinstein are triggering the Me Too movement that is about to sweep the whole world.
Seen the New York Times reporting allegations by numerous women who say the Hollywood mogul sexually harassed them. His alleged victims over nearly...
He has always been a firm believer of equality and justice. So when the Me Too wave reaches Denmark, it fills him with a deep sense of understanding and respect. That same year, on a cold December evening, 100 anonymous statements from the Danish entertainment industry are being read out loud in a small theatre in Copenhagen. It's devastating to hear them. So many cases of abuse, assault, and violation against women in the industry that he has been working in for most of his adult life. And these are just a few of them. He knows that. He starts to do the math. He knows these women. He has been on some of the same productions. He has been attending some of the same theatre schools. He recalls how one of the teachers constantly called the female students names like hottie, sexy, sweetheart, whilst the male students were just called by their name. He tries to recall the numerous productions he has been on and connects the dots one by one. What happened there? What had he not seen, not heard? He speaks to his current colleagues and his old classmates from theatre school, and he's absolutely flabbergasted. Every single woman that he speaks to has experienced some sort of sexual assault. Not all of them so severe, but some of them have been raped. He feels a deep need for justice. He wants to do something, anything. But most of the women say, there isn't much you or any of us can do about it. We tried. Just let it be. As the months pass, he observes how the Danish Me Too movement just slowly and quietly dissolves. everyone seems to be back to life as it was. He can't believe it. This is the time for change, not for the Me Too movement to go gently into that good night. No, like the poet Dylan Thomas wrote, we should instead rage, rage against the dying of the light.
So, could you tell us a little bit about that indignation you felt and why?
Obviously, when the whole Harvey Weinstein stuff came out, that was horrible. It really was horrible. But that was like, this is Hollywood. And then I remember when this 100 written stories came out, reading them just felt like, shit, I know that story. I know her. She told me that. Yeah. But I didn't know the effect of it until now. And I remember when I spoke to a lot of my colleagues and they all had experiences of not all abuse, but
some sort of violation.
Yeah. And it just hurt me because it was been going on for years right in front of my eyes. A lot of this happened without me knowing it and maybe also without me looking for it. And I felt shame that I was in a business where this was sort of allowed or had been allowed to carry on for so long.
And you were a part of this huge survey and peer-reviewed report on violations in the entertainment industry in Denmark, right?
Yeah.
And because of that, quite a few regulations in the industry have taken place.
Yeah, right? A lot of stuff has happened, thank God, because now suddenly the whole country and the politicians got aware that this is actually happening in this business. It's happening in every business.
Yeah.
And because of this survey, we could see that so many people in this age group has experienced this and that, and so many of these minorities have experienced this. You could just see
it's like
it.
This facts.
It's just statistics right there in front of right you, there. Facts. Yeah. And it took a long time to make it as well because it has to be peer-reviewed. And for me, one of the important things is, as a male actor, and also many of my male colleagues, we are now aware that this is happening. So we're looking for it. We're looking, we see it, we hear it, and we can speak out about it. We all have gotten a bigger voice now. And I love the fact that a lot of women now feel like they can speak out, because I didn't know that they didn't feel like they could. And that was one of the things when you are a full up of your male privilege, you don't see it. You just don't see it. It's just, well, because it's not in front of my eyes, it's not a problem, it's not my problem, or whatever. And so it becomes invisible, but now it's not. I feel that that has changed. One of my female colleagues, voiceover actress called Alex Wilson Regan, we had a conversation where she told me that it was so important that I used my voice, as I do, because, as she said, to be honest, if it's just me and all my female friends and female colleagues that talk about this, it keeps being a women's issue. In the moment male voices get into the choir, it becomes a general problem. And that resonated so hard in my mind. Just, shit, yes. Because then you can't just discarded going, oh, it's just them ladies or whatever. It's so important that all men pick up the microphone and just say stop or say enough, call other men out, make a change, God damn it.
I agree. A lot of things have happened and are happening in terms of making the power structure more visible. Because I think that's the next level. I think the 2.0 of the Me Too movement and of dismantling the patriarchy, it still needs to become more visible and understood.
Definitely.
Right?
Boil it down to our business, we just need more women on the boards. We need more women directors. We just need to meet more
women's
equality.
Stories.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that would change a lot. We need more women in the head of the departments, more women on the producer's side, because then we will have more female stories.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm also thinking that men, they've been told big boys don't cry, you know.
Oh, tough, and
exactly,
get, take that world, you
yeah,
know, all that.
And there is something there where we need to tell a new narrative that big boys do cry.
Yeah.
And manning up is not a thing.
No.
And I'm interested to hear your thoughts on men's health in that way. And the, let's call it, new masculinity.
It's all right to cry. It's all right to have a bad day. And sometimes you'll have tried to see through it and work through it. But sometimes you just have to say, hey, it's not a good day, man. I feel terrible because this and that happened. Or I just feel insecure about this. It's about being honest to yourself, I think. And also when you see it in others, listen to it. Not just, oh no, it's awkward now. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about football. Or no, listen. Your friend is opening up now, and if you have two follow up questions, he might get to a new place in his life. But if you start talking about Manchester United now, that's not gonna happen. It's about letting it flow, I think. And as you said, don't say man up, and don't tell your kids that. I'm trying to, when my son is sad or just. To talk about why instead of no, just don't know if he falls and hurt himself, it's all right to that you feel hurt. I also, if he gets mad at me because I say no again and again, then have a chat about why he gets mad or sad because I say no to him, so he can feel that it's all right that he's mad now, it's all right that he's angry about this and that, that feeling is all right. So let's talk us through it.
Yeah, so putting words on it is so important.
It's always about, I think it all comes down to listening. Mm-hmm. Again and again, listening and not trying to feel that void of silence. I'm working on this daily basis because, as you can hear, I'm chatty.
But you can be that and also be a good listener.
I'm definitely working on that myself, to try to ask the questions. So it's about jumping on that train when it's there. And jumping on that train can just be listening. But you need to take the time to do it.
Could I ask you, Magnus, could that also be a method when it comes to locker room talk? Because I think that's a big problem, that the jokes, when men are just by themselves, is one thing. But then also the kind of, you know, old school jokes, just a little bit of making fun, you know, in a comment, for example, just to do... To give an example, like a very cliche one, but in Sweden, a husband might say, well, I'm just going to consult with the government, which is then the wife.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of thing. And then everyone laughs just out of like habit instead of, because if you're the woman on that end of the joke, you'll be killing the whole vibe by not taking that joke, so to speak.
Yeah.
If you would be like, what are you saying? That's not fun. I don't appreciate that. And I feel like this is where men can help each other.
I totally agree that you need to call it out. Or just say, hey, call her by her name. Or not or laugh, because then it gets even more awkward, you know. And, the government down there.
Yeah.
Oh, silence. That's okay. Not cool. It's the small steps. But just being aware of that makes it easier. And I have high hopes on the next generations because they see something else. They see some whole new possibilities. And especially they see a lot of new ways of just looking at about race, about inequality, injustice, all of that. Mm. And that is so important. That's so important that it changes.
And we support that change, right? As our generation, as you're doing with your kids.
Just like when I listened to your podcast with your talk with La Monica, that's horrible. Just the danger of being just him because of the color of his skin, you know? And so it's just hopefully we can change that to the better because the next generations, they hopefully don't see color the same way as the earlier ones.
Or gender the same way,
or
right?
Gender, yeah. Mm. It's so important that that it's allowed to be yourself. I recently read something that I found very important. Is about when you call people out, let's say call men out on whatever they're saying, or call just people out about racial slurs or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can do it two ways. If you tell them this is not cool, you can't speak like that. Why are you saying that about her? Then you let them feel the shame. They feel ashamed. You're not shaming them. They just feel, oh, that's right. Oh, she gets sad. And they'll take that back home with them. And maybe that will be the start of a change. But if you just shame them, going, you racist motherfucker, or they will feel you shame them, and then they will just get angry and maybe just feel even more like you also are fucking whatever. You know, we need to have people understanding and changing by themselves, not by
from within
instead of from being shouted at.
That's what your friend did with you, right? He didn't shame you.
No, exactly.
He confronted you with the truth.
And I think that is
a good point.
That's a very good point.
Exactly. It's also the attitude that you bring, because one thing is saying what your friend did, which was, I see you and I see this with love, saying that with love. But then also, like you were saying yourself, Magnus, to ask the questions like, why did you say that? I'm just like, what's behind that? Are you feeling okay?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that could actually be a question when a joke like that comes up.
Every time I put something up on my social media, Twitter or Instagram, about, you know, Black Lives Matter or abortion rights or just human rights, I will lose a lot of followers instantly, which is interesting. I anyway try to use the small platform I've got to put some views out there that are my views, and that hopefully can get people to think and maybe change. If some people find me interesting, and that's why they're following me on social media, then hopefully, even if they don't agree, they will think, oh, but he also thinks that.
Like he's normally like a huge, big Viking.
Exactly, because one of the main things that was my career breaker has been playing violent Vikings, like very masculine people. And then when they see me with a rainbow on my cheek talking about happy pride, they get confused.
I love
and
it.
And they should. Yes. And then they should start to understand that the world is bigger.
Yes.
And it should change, and everybody should feel love and
feel enough.
Yeah. That everyone should be enough as they are.
There you go, Magnus. Mm. Wow, it has been such a wonderful experience having you in the studio with us.
Yes, I could go on talking to you forever, Magnus.
Exactly. So thank you, Magnus.
No, thank you, Laura. And thank you, Sandra, for having me on your wonderful, wonderful podcast.
Oh, thanks a lot. Can I just say how much I love Tweak Sweets and the people behind it? These amazing women, they want us to be able to treat ourselves and have provided the world with a better alternative to regular candy.
I love them and I love their candy.
Me too.
Check out tweaksweets.com and learn more about this amazing and delicious candy. And now we have the great fortune of having Dr. Simon Rice with us. He is a clinical psychologist and associate professor at the University of Melbourne in Origin
and the National Center of Excellence in Youth Mental Health. He leads the Gender and Social Psychiatry Laboratory and has been researching men's mental health for 15 years. He practices as a senior clinical psychologist with Origins Youth Mood Clinic, where he supports a team of clinicians providing outpatient therapy and case management for young people experiencing severe and complex depression.
Hello, Simon Rice. So lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yes, welcome, welcome.
So you're joining us from Australia, yeah?
Melbourne, Australia, and we're heading into autumn. Well, you know, it's mid-autumn here, so it's winter's
coming. Which is practically like Scandi summer. So in that way, I think we're aligned.
Probably.
Yeah, true.
It is so good to have you here. And we just had this interesting talk to Magnus Brun. He's a Danish actor and he's quite well known for playing this Viking, red-haired, big-bearded in a big international TV show. And he also happens to be quite outspoken when it comes to the support of justice and equality and so on. And he has a lot of followers in social media, and he said something quite interesting. He said that every time he posts something that is related to the support of gender equality, for example, he loses followers. So I'm just quite curious to get your take on why you think that is.
Well, it's not surprising when you think about the controversy that surrounds concepts related to gender and masculinity, and men's mental health kind of fits in that same basket. And when you think more broadly around anything controversial that people post on Twitter or on social media, where there are strong emotions felt on a range of sides, people respond, and some will respond positively, some will respond negatively. It's a shame that through Magnus putting out his opinions around wanting to change things for the better, that he loses followers. But some people aren't in a space where they're able and ready to accept that, or they interpret it as a threat, or they interpret it in a way that's not meant. So I think it's unsurprising, but it's a shame.
Yeah, because it's interesting you're using the word controversial in a sense of someone saying we need to be equal, basically, that some people would consider that controversial. Is that what you mean?
I think some people do, because they would perceive that rights would be taken away from men rather than rights being appropriately granted or upheld for other gendered groups, including women. And I think people's perception is what would lead to their strong response. And some people would misinterpret that. Some people will have very strong views and perspectives. Our view, the view of our research team, is that we should be doing all that we can to support gender equity and gender equality. And that means that we will end up with a much fairer world. And as a consequence of that, a byproduct of that, things actually will improve for men. But many people, many men, don't necessarily see it that way. And some women as well.
Yeah, because you talk about, which I actually really like, you talk more about positive masculinity than you talk about toxic masculinity. And why is that? Why do you word it that way?
We do, and there are a few reasons. So toxic masculinity isn't an established term in the scientific literature base. It doesn't have an agreed academic definition. That said, people broadly have a sense of what it is, and that tends to be around men's perceptions or men's expectations around entitlement and power and dominance over others, and usually over women and other minority genders, but not necessarily the case. But there's not an agreed definition within our academic literature. So that's one reason, but probably the more significant reason is, in our experience, it can be a term that disengages the men that we're trying hard to engage. And we're trying hard to engage them because we see that something needs to change in our culture, something needs to change in the way that men believe that they need to behave, and we need to be doing all that we can to proactively engage that group to try to get things improving for their own mental health, for the way that they relate to other male peers. And using a term like toxic masculinity, for some men, they will perceive that that means that there's nothing good about masculinity, that masculinity in itself is inherently toxic. And I don't think that's really what the term means, but I think that's how some men do interpret it.
Could you explain this concept of precarious masculinity for us? Because I feel like that's quite important when we're talking about this.
Very happy to talk about precarious masculinity. And the concept evolves from the work of Joseph Bandello in the United States. And his work talks about this hypothesis, that the precarious manhood hypothesis, and that being that manhood is a temporary state that is hard won and easily lost. And by being hard won, it relates to a sense that it has to be performed, that it has to be awarded by others, and that it can be taken away, and that it's somewhat temporary in the fact that it needs to be repeatedly displayed over and over again. So it's not like a status that is awarded, and once a male is given the status of manhood, that you've achieved manhood, that then it's fixed and that remains forever. There's constant performative actions, especially in front of peers, male peers who might be outside a friendship group and might be unknown to you. And I think also for some males, female peers as well, and other gendered groups. And Bandello has shown through a series of experimental studies that males who, probably the best term is threatened, their sense of masculinity, their sense of manhood is threatened, can enact sense of aggression or anger to balance up the scales of this kind of perceived lost sense of manhood. And so they did some fantastic experiments where male participants and female participants in their studies as well were asked to do identical tasks of either braiding a knot, which is, you know, stereotypically a bit of a masculine type task, or braiding hair. The motor coordination skills are exactly the same, except one is a much more feminized task, one is a more masculine task. And what they found was that especially the guys who were completing that task, the males were more likely to choose a task after the braiding task that would involve punching a punching bag, twice as likely than were females. And they're also much more likely, and a large effect size was found, where they would punch the punching bag much more ferociously, much more harder. And they did a series of studies to support this across a range of different groups and came to the conclusion that there's something about this state of, for young men in particular, their gender identity being challenged in a way that falls outside the norm of what's expected for men and young men. And that through that challenge, they enact this sense of aggression or violence or anger to reinstate that.
It sounds exhausting.
Yeah, exhausting and a way to compensate. That's what it is, right?
Well, I think there's so much related to social expectations connected to masculinity that ends up being exhausting and a facade and performative for men and for young men and boys. And if we were just to pause and give guys the skills to reappraise some of these societal expectations, they might actually be more comfortable to choose the moments when they buy into them versus the moments when they reject them. And having a greater sense of flexibility might end up giving them better physical and mental health and better ways of supporting and caring for those around them as well.
No, I wanted to say, just to clarify this precarious masculinity. So, for example, if we compare that to being a woman, so scientifically that means that, for example, we have more of a proof of our femininity through certain things, like, for example, getting our period.
Well, Vandello's team would argue that's the physical biological proof that womanhood, the state of womanhood once achieved, is a biological state, but there's more of a grey zone around men and males achieving that state of manhood, and the cultural expectations around manhood and masculinity unrealistic, just like there are unrealistic expectations around what women need to achieve, especially in relation to body image. There are challenges around masculinity for men and young men in particular.
In your line of work, do you now know what helps these, I presume, young men especially, change the narrative of what it is to be a man, so that they don't fall into that shame cycle even with themselves, where they feel like they need to reestablish the manhood all the time?
What we would argue is that young men without the role models to provide guidance around how things could be different can get stuck in the way of being that is kind of generations old and would suggest that men have to be stoic and silent and invulnerable, and if anything bad happens, just grin and bear it and get on with life and suffer in silence. Now, there are some positive elements of that way of living, a very stoic way of living, but there are also significant problems. Life events happen and the resources that you've got to cope with those life events aren't sufficient, and then feeling a state of overwhelm, feeling a state of that you can't cope, then that can put young men and men at risk of having problematic mental health symptoms or a mental health disorder. We know from years and years and years, decades of research, that men are much more likely to cope through substances, alcohol, drug use. You know, we call it maladaptive coping, but often for men, they find that in the short term, it's a really helpful coping strategy. And a lot of that comes back to many men and boys not feeling like they've got the social support network around them to be able to buffer them and cope in ways that don't mean that they have to rely on substances. So all of these things kind of get tangled and tied up together, and we would argue strongly young men and boys were given a wider range of role models without ridicule, without a sense of them being mocked, then they would have more examples to choose from and enact in their own life, and a greater, a more flexible array of coping strategies.
So actually what Magnus is doing, especially, I presume, playing a Viking, showing that side, that kind of role modeling is actually really, really important, because he also talked about not shaming. So when he calls out his peers, for example, he's quite adamant to not shame them, but to just mirror them and say, is this necessary? Could there be another way of wording or talking about this female, for example?
I think what Magnus is doing is showing two ends of a very broad spectrum. And I think it's fantastic that he's role modeling that range. More of that is needed in our society. And once we see that, and once young men and boys are able to perceive that that's happening, they'll feel more comfortable with being able to take on a broader range of identities and land on the kinds of identities that are going to work for them in a healthy way.
I want to ask you about something that I've been thinking about. You know, most women have been in many different situations. For example, when you're at the gym and men come up to you and want to give you tips and instructions without you asking for it. Or in my case, like being an actor, being on set, often men take the liberty, like a fellow actor or a producer, to direct you, even though that's not what they're there to do. And asking questions first is something that doesn't seem to be a male behavior. And I wonder if that's something that you've been studying and why that is. Because also, just to add another example, is like the numerous parties I've been at and sitting next to men and I haven't gotten a single question. You know, it's an interesting thing, I think.
What do you think drives that?
I think it is that you need to know as a man, right? That you're supposed to come with the answers, not the questions.
That might be the case. And it might also be the case that men who act in those ways think that they're upholding the societal expectations of this is what a man does and this is how a man behaves.
And vicarious manhood.
If I want to earn my place and if I want to be seen as a good man, as a real man, you know, we use that term a lot, don't we, what a real man is, then these are the kind of behaviours I have to show. And that's not necessarily the case at all. And we've seen that explode in lots of different ways around the consent debate, which is what it's kind of become here in Australia. And the government has actively had to listen to that because women have been marching on our federal parliament house demanding more, and rightfully so. And you know, we're seeing incremental changes by our political leaders, but our society is asking for much bigger changes, really.
But have you had that, I would call Me Too 2.0, that it is actually not only about the sexual assault, the way that hit the whole world, but it is a proof of the dysfunctional power structure, right? So it's like you want to make that visible. So the next step from that is seeing where is this showing up in our lives? Has that been discussion that has become more nuanced in Australia, for example? Because I feel like that's moving slower than you would want it to be.
I think it is. I agree. And that discussion links in to the gender pay gap that we have in Australia. That discussion links in to paid childcare. So many young mums, women, have the bulk of the childcare duties, and therefore that holds their careers back, and we need to do more there. That conversation ramping up considerably around the abortion debate that's now happening in the United States. Mm. So it's definitely a series of conversations that will continue to actively happen.
Mm. But it's such a hugely tense field, the not only equality but balance of feminine and masculine. And then there's also healing, right? Because as a woman, obviously, there has been a lot of, well, grief, a lot of anger, loads of things that have been piling up with us being told as women, be pretty, shut up and smile and just be easy, otherwise you're difficult. And men have been told, don't cry. Big boys don't cry and so on. Mm. We need to go to a place where all the anger, all the grief needs to have a space, both for men and for women. And then somehow we need to come back to an understanding of the dynamics. And as you said, historical perspective on masculinity is not only negative. There are great things in there, talking about stoicism. And I know, Sandra, that you talked about that you could relate to that very well.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. It's very, very hard to push down your emotions all the time. And there is so much aggression that comes out of that that's very unhealthy. But again, that we've said on this podcast many times, that it feels like if you let it out, it will never stop. And I don't know what's going to happen. But the fact of the matter is that once you let emotions out, they're not lasting for a very long time, especially not anger, actually. I think that it is an interesting thing that it feels like that to us when we're not used to letting out our emotions. And I very much have lived through that and have trained myself to do that. And so I think that is a major thing, just the practicing of letting your emotions out. And I'm guessing that, Simon, is something you are working with.
Well, I think for so many men, they've been socialized into there being two ways of being. Either things are fine and I'm good and happy, or things are bad and I'm angry. And it leaves a very impoverished emotional color palette of everything in between. But for many men, there's not a lot of grey, and they haven't been role modelled that grey. And frankly, they're probably a little bit afraid, scared, uncomfortable by it, and so they don't go there. So there can be an element of suppression, and some of that sadness can come out as anger and aggression and risk-taking and irritability. And a lot of our work tries to tease apart whether that cluster of symptoms, which broadly we call externalizing symptoms, and you can throw problematic drug and alcohol use in the mix as well, whether that might be a male-specific way of expressing or experiencing depression. And there's growing research around the world now supporting that idea. And it's really interesting because the foundational research that was done on this concept came from Gotland in Sweden. And there was a particular rating scale that was developed, the Gotland Male Depression Scale. And that rating scale as a screening tool for depression has really catalyzed a new line of research. So we definitely have Sweden to thank for that work in the early 1990s. And researchers around the world are now taking notice that maybe the way in which we conceptualize and assess depression might be missing the mark for men. And we think that's really significant because men globally have a much, much higher suicide rate relative to women. So about 75% of the suicides that occur globally, suicides in men, and in almost all countries, not all but most, the suicide rate is substantially higher amongst men. And we wonder whether that could be because part of our ways of detecting depression aren't sensitized, that they're not specific enough to the way in which men might show depression. It is complicated because men are more likely to choose more violent means to die by suicide, so they're more likely to go for a more lethal method like a gun or a rope. And perhaps there's a narrative for some men that if things are going really bad and I'm having thoughts of ending my life, I need to do it properly, because to fail at suicide would be the worst stigma that I could perhaps have to endeavour. To which we'd say, absolutely not. The fact that you tried suicide and it wasn't successful, you didn't die by suicide, is a great opportunity for us to help and wrap our arms around you and support you to get better.
I was just wondering, because this podcast, we always ask the experts for hands-on advice. So sometimes the talk can be quite diffuse for people to listen to and they don't know how to implement that in their own lives.
I think for men who are starting to question a little bit more the constraints that they might experience as a consequence of socialization around masculinity, there are things that they can think about. There are things that they can do. As far as symptoms related to depression, there's a fantastic web resource that's developed in Canada called Heads Up Guys. So Heads Up Guys is a male-specific depression information resource and service linkage across many countries internationally, where information is tailored to, and the look and the feel of the website is tailored to men in particular. So it's much of the same kind of information that you'd receive on a generic mental health website, but it's tailored in a way that makes a guy visiting that website feel like, oh, this is the kind of place where dudes would go and get info. And therefore, a lot of that stigma is dissolved instantly. So that's one thing. I think more broadly, as a service sector, we have to do better at sensitizing, at tailoring our interventions and our approaches. And we're doing some great work around training clinicians. And so there's an organization called Movember. Movember are the world's largest men's health charity. And Dr. Zach Seidler is leading a program of work called the Men in Mind Intervention, which is around training clinicians to better support men who are seeking mental health support. So psychotherapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, to better understand some of these experiences related to masculinity and how they can impact on men and the help-seeking process. And I think for men at the individual level, reaching out to those who you do have a close, trusting relationship with, if you're going to have a conversation or if you're going to talk about something for the first time that's pretty big, it's pretty heavy, I'd encourage guys just to take a moment to think who are the best people in your network to talk about. Some people are inherently better at having those kind of conversations than others. And even just starting that conversation can often be catalytic to the help-seeking process and getting better and feeling a sense of being unburdened by sharing what's going on for you.
That's wonderful. We'll link to these things on our website as well. Thank you very much.
Can I ask you, what do you think would be advice for women? Because one thing to do is maybe not to say, why the hell don't you ask any questions? You just want to open up so that we have more of these conversations, is what I'm thinking, but I would love to hear your ideas about that.
One way to address it would be to be very specific about it and say, hey, you never asked me any questions, and see how that goes. That in some instances that might be a great way to resolving it. And for some men, they might be educated and they might be very keen to change the way they relate. For other men, that might be a bit confronting, or they might feel criticized. I think it's always very much an individual basis, and thinking through that what feels right in that moment is probably the way to go.
Yeah. No, you're right. And that is good advice, because there's also about the way you say it, of course, how it feels on the receiving end. But I have to say that it is kind of comical, because a lot of my friends who are, for example, on dating apps and are dating a lot are saying the same thing. I'm sitting there, I have to ask all the questions. So for me as a woman, I would say to all the male listeners out there that is a beautiful thing. Ask more questions. It is so appreciated. And by asking questions, we connect. And that is really what this podcast is all about. How do we experience real connection in this world?
And I think understanding how different people do feel connected. And for some men, maybe they for whatever reason, asking questions isn't a way of promoting connection. They feel connection through doing shared activities, going on a walk together, doing something, hanging out together in a different way, and working out for each individual couple what helps facilitate connection, and each partner shifting is also part of that a little bit too.
Oh, that's so true, Simon. Thank you for bringing that up. Because also I heard a really great thing that hard conversations many times is really good to have while moving and walking or doing something together, that a lot of people experience that it is so much easier.
Driving in a car can be a great way when you're trying to get to a destination, because, you know, you can be looking elsewhere, which is often a preferred method of males to communicate. But you're also stuck in the car together until you get to your destination. So there's a period of time, and ideally that's a time which you can resolve whatever's going on.
Go through the uncomfortable moments of talking and getting to the other side in the car, yeah.
That's right. But many men do communicate in slightly different ways. Many men, they struggle to identify and name emotions. And so we call that alexithymia on the more severe end of the spectrum. And that can make it really difficult to experience and process what's going on for them emotionally. And so if that's the case, being aware of that and helping a male partner kind of potentially identify what might be going on for them can be important. I don't say that in the sense that it should be up to women to do men's emotional work, but where there are deficits and skills gaps, support for men to plug those skills gap and role modelling around those can be helpful, regardless of who that comes from.
Historically, women have practiced talking to each other for centuries, and men have not. And I feel that there are many men that I know that are looking for other men where it's okay to say what is, meaning to say what's inside, but they don't know how. They don't have the vocabulary, maybe even. So it's really a thing of, as fathers, teaching them to use words to talk about their feelings, understanding that through the spoken word, you learn a lot about yourself and how you feel inside. And it's actually quite a necessary way of dealing with things, saying things out loud.
I think fathers being able to role model for their sons is a fantastic way. The question is how we can support fathers in that task.
Yes.
And that work, we're not even at base camp with that kind of research. Mm-hmm. And there are groups that are really interested in the mentoring, the role modelling kind of work that fathers and father-like figures can be doing. Tomorrow Man runs workshops called Breaking the Man Code. So for 2 hours, they'll go into a school, they'll work with a group of, you know, 15, 16-year-old boys in their groups to kind of work out, well, what are the rules that you've learned to live by? What are the rules about being a man? And all of those kind of get spoken about and documented, and then they start to kind of interrogate, well, when do these rules work for you versus when do these rules backfire or sabotage or stuff up what you're trying to do? We need more stuff like that, whether it's in schools or broader communities. We could run it, roll it out in sports groups, and this is happening now. And we're starting to collect the data on it through randomized controlled trials. And it's important work, and we need to see it spread.
Let's hope that it's spreading fast.
Exactly. And let what you just said be an encouragement for everyone to get in there and be a part of the, I presume, new narrative.
Thank you for the important work that you do, Simon, and for spending this time with us clarifying what is going on in the research world regarding this. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Wow, it really, really hits home for me how important Simon Rice's work is. Creating both an understanding of the misconstrued power structure and a safe space in which this can change. I mean, because we all deserve to just be free of gender constraints, to just feel enough. You know, without constantly having to prove to ourselves and others that we fit into a certain gender category or any category.
I couldn't agree more. I really couldn't. I certainly learned a lot today, for sure. And if you want to learn more about our guests, today's subjects, and get links to various inspiring sites and communities on men's mental health, please visit ComingHomePodcast.com.
Coming Home is produced in partnership with Acast. The editing and sound mixing of this episode is made by Rahmatullah Sheikh. Our theme music is made by Caroline Jungstrom, and our website is designed by Seth and Austin Communication Bureau.
We truly appreciate all the feedback we get from you, and we simply can't do this without you. So if you want to be a part of building this community and letting more people into the conversation, be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really liked it. And if you didn't, that's absolutely okay as well.
Thank you for listening to Coming Home with me, Sandra Andres.
And me, Laura Bach.
Take care and remember, be kind to yourselves till next time.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.